Jesus says in John 8, verse 31, "If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples."
Pastor Will Wheaton talking about his presentation at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
I know you want to be truly Jesus' disciple. That means abiding in Jesus' word. Abide means live in, as in Jesus' word becomes your abode. Jesus wants his word to become your home, the place where you hang out, where you're nourished and refreshed. The cool thing is that when you make the word your home, then God, the Blessed Trinity, makes his home inside of you.
You can meet and hear Pastor Will Wheaton making the case for daily Bible reading at this year's Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
You are probably asking, how are they able to do that? Well, think of this. As a movie set, people have been vaxxed, tested, retested, socially distanced, and we are following all of the rigorous protocols.
Refuse hate. Don't hate anybody. I refuse to hate someone because they are Mexican or because they are black or white or LGBTQ. I refuse to hate someone because they are a police officer. I refuse to hate someone because they are Asian.
Anthony Hopkins, the father.
Please watch our movie on the largest screen possible, and one day, very, very soon, take everyone you know into a theater, shoulder to shoulder, in that dark space, and watch every film that's represented here tonight.
Some of the sounds from last night's Oscars. You probably didn't see it because a lot of people didn't see it. It wasn't that it wasn't broadcast, it's just that very few Americans were watching the Academy Awards, less than 10 million for the first time in the show's history. And that's down 58% from last year's pandemic Oscars, which were a record low themselves. So how did it go? It was held in a different venue. It had a different format. They mixed things up. It had no comic relief. Glenn Close apparently did some sort of dance that got people amused a little bit. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Monday afternoon, April the 26th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the Oscars with Pastor Ted Geese. He teaches a course at Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. We'll spend some time with Pastor Will Wheaton since it is Easter and continues to be for some weeks the Easter hymn, This Joyful Eastertide. And then we'll spend some time with Dr. Ken Cherb in our series, The Old Testament in a Church Year, talking about David and Bathsheba with Dr. Ken Cherb. Joining us to discuss the 2021 Oscars, Pastor Ted Geese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary, A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
By their own numbers, the Oscars this year, well, the viewership dropped 58% from last year, which was in the middle of the pandemic and was already a record low for this award show. Less than 10 million viewers watched the Oscars. How do you account for that?
I think there's a couple things. Like, one thing is different times along the way, you'll often have like office pools, like people will put together a who's going to win the Oscar for this or that kind of a thing. And a lot of people are working from home. All of that kind of stuff has probably been completely disrupted. Plus, you didn't have the opportunity to go to the theater to watch these movies, right? So I think that that's part of it as well. I mean, I know in past years, some of them are not, you know, the big budget films. So you'd have to go to a repertory theater or some smaller theater to find the movie to watch it. And of course, those are closed right now. So that's in some places, lots of places, they are here. So we had to kind of go online online streaming, I guess, with Netflix and places like that to find them. And of course, if you don't have every single streaming service, you might not be able to see every single movie. So that kind of cuts your audience potentially out of the mix. And then on top of that, you know, like, they have a relatability problem, and I think they're starting to figure that out. So, for instance, this year's telecast, they had a big focus on their personal stories of how they got into the movie industry. Like, what was your first job in the movie industry or whatever? And some of them, like Aaron Sorkin's, was like, I worked in a movie theater, you know, giving people their popcorn, right? So they're trying to make themselves seem relatable, but maybe it's too late. Because the other thing is that people are kind of tired of being hectored all the time about politics and other things. And that has an impact. I think that overall, through the whole entire last year, even things like the Super Bowl, I think the attendance were down in terms of viewership. So I think that basically media across the board has been taking a big hit. In fact, so much so that we didn't even talk about the Golden Globes this year. It just kind of came and went. I watched the Golden Globes, but the Golden Globes were just horrifyingly terrible. Like, they were clunky beyond clunky. Like, none of the jokes worked. Everything was a total disaster. I wouldn't say that for this. Like, the Oscars definitely, they had Sonnenberg doing the kind of like, the, you know, plotting everything out and quote unquote directing it. So they did, I'd say, a much better, smoother, more presentable version of the Oscars, considering all of the weird stuff they had to contend with because of COVID. But interestingly, Regina King, right at the very beginning, comes in and she's like the first person to get up and talk to kind of introduce everything. And they have this big, long kind of like swaggering, like her just kind of strutting all the way up to the front. And then she gets to her mark and she kind of stumbles a little bit. And it's it was kind of almost emblematic of how the whole entire telecast would go, because even with all the weird changes and everything, there was this kind of peacocking that they were doing as they strutted along through the whole show. And then at the very end, they kind of stumbled. So it's kind of funny how that all works. But I think that, you know, like, people, if you haven't seen the movies, you don't have a movie to root for. So you're not there to, like, to see if your movie wins. Like, I remember being a little kid and like loving like Star Wars and like sci-fi movies, and they would sometimes be up for all sorts of awards, and I'd want them to win like a little kid does, but then they would never win like the awards that I thought that they should win. And at this point, I think if you just have not seen these movies, you're not going to be interested.
I'm thinking, you had mentioned the Golden Globes. I'm thinking about a now famous monologue given by comedian Ricky Gervais at the 2020 Golden Globes, which were held right before the pandemic descended on everyone.
Yes.
And he basically declared the Hollywood awards shows, pageants, whatever you want to call them, dead, and very, very scathingly pointed out to his audience of glitterati that they were completely out of touch with reality. Do you think he's right?
Yeah, he's barely in touch with reality, you know, himself. But I think that that's the case. And whether or not they heard him, I know that I think he retweeted his monologue right from the Golden Globes right on the same day as the Oscars were coming out this last Sunday. So, yeah, I think that if they, this is a problem, right? Like, one of the problems is that the fewer people who are watching, perhaps the more emboldened they will become to focus on their own personal politics. This is one of those kind of proximity things. If they have the feeling that, and they can see that the ratings are there, that a gigantic cross-section of people in North America or around the world are in fact watching, then they may feel as though they have to kind of rein themselves in for that broader audience. Right. But as the broader audience kind of dwindles and it becomes like an in-house thing with the people who are most interested, and if they think that they're all kind of on the same page politically or ideologically, then maybe they're going to become more and more emboldened to just like, quote unquote, be themselves, as it were. One kind of curious thing that I noted, and I don't know what to make exactly of all of it, but the only people who thanked God were people of African descent. Like, they're the only ones that in their acceptance speeches mentioned God and thanked God. One of the fellows who was involved with the soundtrack for the movie Soul, which I haven't seen yet, thanked God for the 12 notes that musicians use and composers use to make music. which I thought was kind of interesting. But I mean, like, mostly they were the only ones that did that. So if you have like a lot of people around the world who are actually religious and they only see a very few people in there, thank God, I don't know what to entirely make of all of that, but it's just something that I noted.
What did you make of the fact that there was no, usually there's some kind of humor, there's even sometimes sketch comedy to a very limited extent up on the big stage in the usually large theater that this thing is held in. But several people have noted that this is a pretty humorless awards ceremony.
I don't know. I think Glenn Close dancing
that was just cringeworthy. It was,
yes. I mean, why would you be laughing? Like, maybe for the wrong reasons. I think that they were trying to have some humor in there, I think, but you're right. I mean, it was a different kind of a thing. They didn't have the host, like the main host, because they didn't want a Ricky Gervais type of person up there. Like, I think as far as they were concerned, this is not a time to poke fun about anything, right? Like, it's too darn serious a time. So that was maybe part of it. But the weird thing was the way that everything was laid out, right? Like, normally they're in a big theater, right? The Dolby Theater or whatever, and it's theater seating. But because of the way they had this in the train station that they decked out for that, it was almost more like the Golden Globes in terms of, like, they were sitting at tables and it changed the atmosphere of the whole entire, like, in fact, I would say the Oscars did a better job of being the Golden Globes this year than the Golden Globes did at being the Golden Globes this year, if that makes any sense. And they tried, like, the, you know, name that tune thing. That was the Glenn Close moment, which was totally scripted, by the way, I'm sure. Call me a conspiracy theorist, but I don't think that Glenn Close actually knew that song. And I think that it was all designed. Maybe the first couple of people weren't designed, but that was the punchline, and they wanted to make sure that it landed right. And it was fairly awkward. But I don't know. I think that, like, some of the more funny moments might have been from the actual recipients of the awards too. But overall, yeah, it didn't have the song and dance numbers. It wasn't, like, set up like that. It was very different than normal. And in fact, they even changed the order in which the awards were being given out. So normally it's the best picture is the last one. But what they did is they flipped it all around so that the best actor was the last one. And I think they had a feeling that it was going to go a particular way, and they wanted to have, like, an emotional end to punctuate the whole thing. And that gets back to what I was alluding to about that little bit of a stumble. So they didn't have to maybe do all of that. But again, we've talked about this at different times, I think, in the past, about how right now, like, feelings are more important than factual things. So they kind of ditched tradition in favor of what they thought would give the audience the feels, right? I think those are the kinds of, the focus was less on humor and, you know, razzmatazz, and more on emotions and trying to be relatable, and also, like, trying to showcase the industry.
Did we have the typical moments of preachy Hollywood, now that I'm a millionaire, you have to listen to what I say?
I mean, there were some. I mean, they were trying to be relatable when they did it. And I think that probably things would have been much different, let's say, if the George Floyd trial for Derek Chauvin had gone differently last week, or when that came to its conclusion. Because Regina King, who, like I said, started everything off, she had said, now I know a lot of you people at home want to reach for your remote when you feel like Hollywood is preaching at you. But as a mother of a black son, I know the fear that so many live with, and no amount of fame or fortune changes that, okay, she said. And then she said if the trial had gone differently, she may have switched out her high heels for marching boots, right? So I think that it could have been more political. I'm quite positive that if let's say Donald Trump had won the last election and he was still the president, and the trial had gone a different way, then I think the circumstances would have generated more of those kind of comments. Although there were some things, like I'd heard that China had blocked information about the winner of the best picture, Chloe Zhao, like, she's Chinese, Chinese origin, like, blocked information about her winning in China. So there's still political things going on with the Oscars. It's just not the way that it normally would be, I guess.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're talking about the 2021 Academy Awards. We'll get into Best Actor in a Leading Role after this. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. continues to rank among the top podcasts in Christianity. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will help make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
The New Testament includes four versions of the life, suffering, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, the Son of God and the Son of Man. We call these four different views on Jesus the four Gospels. Well, how do they relate to one another? Why do we have four different Gospels? How do they each portray Jesus in a unique way? Well, if you've asked any of these questions before, the Lutheran Witness, April issue of the Lutheran Witness is for you. Pick up your copy at cph.org/witness or visit our website, witness.lcms.org, to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
In about 15 minutes, we'll study the Easter hymn, This Joyful Eastertide, with Pastor Will Whedon of The Word of the Lord Endures Forever. We're talking about the 2021 Oscars. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. So, Ted, let's talk about the awards themselves. Best Actor in a Leading Role. Who was nominated and who won?
Well, see, this is the thing where I'd mentioned that they'd put this at the end of the whole thing. And the kind of complicated part was is that they seem to have been expecting Chadwick Boseman to win. And he was in this Ma Rain's Black Bottom movie, and he was playing a trumpet player. And of course, he's deceased, so that would be a posthumous award. They were expecting him to win, but actually it was, in the end, Anthony Hopkins who won for this film called The Father, which is an adaptation of a stage play. And it's about a man who's suffering with dementia and is kind of on the cusp and being directed towards moving into a care home. And he does a really great job. I think he's 83 years old. So this is the oldest actor to have won an Academy Award for the Best Actor category. And he, of course, wasn't there. Like he lives in Wales and that's where he was. He's 83 years old. There's a worldwide pandemic. He probably didn't think he was going to win. Like there's lots of reasons for him to just stay put in Wales. And of course he wins. He had won in 1992 for the film The Silence of the Lambs. And he'd been nominated a bunch of other times, but he didn't think he was going to win. So he wasn't there even. So that's kind of a peculiarity. And that was supposed to be the big feels moment, was that Chadwick Boseman, who's an African-American actor, that he would win, and then somebody would get up on his behalf and give a big moving speech at the end of the, you know, in acceptance of it. But that didn't happen. So the Academy voters zigged when they expected them to zag. And of course, this is a meritocracy. It's not like the Golden Globes where this little oligarchy decides who's going to win. So it just didn't go the way that they had expected. It was a big surprise.
What about best actress in a leading role?
Yeah, best actress in a leading role. This is was a big night for Frances McDormand. She was in this movie called Nomadland by this Chloe Zhao, the Chinese lady. And Frances McDormand also helped produce the movie. And Nomadland is about a widow who decides to live in an RV and have a nomadic life. And it's a peculiar movie in that it's like probably two-thirds traditional narrative and one-third documentary. So this Chloe Zhao like went and incorporated in actual people who live this kind of life and went to the places they go to and kind of sorted out all of that kind of stuff and just wove it just almost seamlessly into the film. So Frances McDormand plays this woman named Fern, and she works like at Amazon picking orders. And then her town was kind of closed down because it was like a mining town, and the mine was closed, and everybody, there was nothing, no other industry there. Her husband died, the town closed, and then she was kind of left on her own, and she went off RVing with everything that she owned, all that she had with her, I guess. She had a storage locker. But it's actually a really kind of fascinating film, and it's something kind of about hope, and there's even some religious moments in it. There's spots where she's like singing "What Child Is This?" like the Christmas Carol. That's kind of an interesting little element of it. It's very, for kind of being sort of bleak, it's also full of a lot of hope.
Was that film also Best Picture then?
That was the Best Picture winner. Also, it won for Best Director for this Chloe Zhao. So it won 3 awards and was nominated for 6. So it's one of the bigger wins. Also, it's a woman director. So sometimes there's the complaint that, you know, not enough women are in the category of a Best Director and not enough of them win. And she's a very gracious recipient of the award. Like she was very eloquent, and she also won at the Golden Globes as well.
I'm looking through the list here, and I think even of the nominees, I probably know only 2 or 3 of these films, much less the winners. Am I typical?
You probably are. I mean, Michelle and I, my wife and I, we went out of our way to watch some of them. She actually watched a couple more than I did. She watched the Octopus Teacher documentary, which I didn't watch. But I watched The Father, which we talked about, Nomadland, which we talked about, The Trial of the Chicago 7 by Aaron Sorkin. We talked about that. I mean, that's one that I watched. Mulan was also one that was up for a couple of awards, didn't win any. Greyhound was up for an award, didn't win any. Mank was up for 10 nominations and won 2. Which I saw that one. It won for Best Cinematography, which actually should have gone to Nomadland, and then also Production Design. And there's a movie called Minari. That one was up for 6 Academy Awards by a South Korean director, Lee Isaac Chang. And that was a really great movie. We watched that one about a Korean family starting a farm in Arkansas in the 1980s. And then Christopher Nolan's movie Tenet, which we talked about. So those are the ones I watched that were up for awards, but there was a lot of movies I didn't see. Like The Sound of Metal, I didn't see that one. This Ma Rain's Black Bottom, I didn't see it. The United States versus Billie Holiday, Pieces of a Woman, Promising Young Woman. There's a bunch of ones that I just didn't end up seeing at all. And like, listen, I am more likely to see them, you know. I think I'm above average for a lot of these, for seeing these films. But yeah, I didn't see everything. And there are some, like even that movie Soul was one that it's a Disney one. It's Pixar. I even had some listeners from Issues, etc. get a hold of me and say, you should watch it and we should talk about it. And I don't know. I think that like I couldn't bring myself to watch it because I knew kind of what it was going to be about. And even like this movie Minari that we watched, which is about this family, Korean family going to Arkansas in the 80s, starting a farm. It was almost like I had this weird experience because we just watched this on Saturday, I guess. The weird experience I had was that, and now this is coming from a parish pastor, okay? I'm watching the movie and it started to feel like work in a way, like, or, you know, I wanted to be distracted, and the problems these people had were the kind of problems people have. Like, it was too close to home in a way, or too real. It was too, and it's, if you want to have some chance to get away from everything, some of these movies aren't going to do it. Like, Nomadland is great, but if you're suffering from hard time being employed, if you've in the middle of all this pandemic, if you've lost your husband or wife, if you've lost your home or something, I would not recommend this movie to go watch. Or let's say you've got a parent who is suffering from dementia and you're trying to figure out how to get them into a senior's home or a care home and they don't want to go. Well, then a movie like The Father, which is just superbly acted, is still going to be heart-wrenchingly too close to home, perhaps, for you. There were times during the year where some of these films I knew were probably going to be Oscar films, where it just, I had a hard time bringing myself to watch them, if that makes any kind of sense, because we're already kind of all collectively going through a tough, a tough time. And I like some kind of dirgy, depressing, you know, introspective films every once in a while, but it just didn't seem like that was necessarily exactly what I was looking for as a viewer this year.
We were talking about this earlier around the office in relationship to a different show, a TV series, not films, but we go to, or we watch film to be amused. And I don't mean in the kind of the colloquial sense, laugh in every case. It's to be distracted. That's what amused means. It means to not think for a while. And I'm wondering if Hollywood's kind of shooting itself in the foot by producing things, in essence, kind of extended, very well-produced think pieces, in a time when people really not only want to, but need to be distracted a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sliding scale. Like, sometimes you do just want to just have something distracting because everything else has been so much. And other times you do want to have things that are going to press you and make you think a little bit and get you going in a different direction. I mean, everybody's going to be a little bit different. Sometimes what happens is if you watch the kind of things that are going to challenge you to stretch a bit, if you watch a couple of those after that, you want to watch Dumb and Dumber, like, or, you know, with Jim Carrey. And, you know, like, you just want, like, you need to, it's almost like a big fancy meal where you might, between certain courses, need something to cleanse the palate, right? You might need your sherbet all of a sudden just to kind of like rinse your brain of like the tough stuff and then go back to the tough stuff again. There's certainly a place for that stuff. I mean, I like some movies that I really, really cherish are great movies. I just watched again The Passion of Joan of Arc, which is a 1928 black and white film, and is just, it's a superb, interesting, visceral, actually good religious film, right? But at the same time, it's like, you know, maybe you just want to watch Doctor Strange and watch, like, you know, some sci-fi bending of whatever and action stuff, right? Like, I think every viewer is a little bit different. Like, there are certainly going to be times where, you know, I can't really bring myself to watch the Hallmark movies. I know some people just love them to death, but there are going to be things that people don't really want to see. But I just noticed when I was watching this Minari that there were points in it where I was having kind of the same sort of maybe stressful feelings that you might have when you watch a horror film, because you knew what was going to happen next. And as it was unfolding, it was like, this is too much. So when people look back at this time, I think some of these movies are going to be more poignant than maybe they even are in the moment. So there's a way in which that's kind of perhaps good for future audiences and future people who might look back at this time. But for those of us who are kind of grinding through all of this COVID stuff right now, it was interesting because we talked about Frances McDormand. One of the things she said, like when they were winning Best Picture, because she was a producer, she got to talk then too, and she really encouraged people to get back in the theaters and watch films when they're able to. And she said, shoulder to shoulder in the dark room, you know, together, and, you know, watch these films that were up for these awards. Like, it was almost desperate plea, but at the same time, it was like an acknowledgement of the fact that we've lost something in the midst of all of this. And so the question is, what have we lost? What have we found in the midst of all of it?
Oscar nomination, much less an Oscar win, used to mean money in the bank. Does it still mean that for the film industry?
Well, for some of these films, for sure. I mean, more people will have seen this movie Nomad than would have otherwise, I'm sure. I mean, if it wasn't up for any awards at all, if it didn't have the press that it was having. And even right now, like when we rented The Father and we rented Minari, and we had to pay like, you know, $20 Canadian or whatever to watch it. So that's, they're getting some money out of that. Nomadland was part of Disney Plus's subscription because they picked up some other kind of streaming service, Star or something, Stars. So that's now available through the Disney Plus app. So if you have that Disney Plus streaming service, you can watch Nomadland on there. But yes, and I think the Trial of the Chicago 7 is on Netflix. So if you already have your subscription to these things, I don't know how much money they're going to make out of that. But in some cases, you know, people are paying money to see the film directly from their home. So they're still going to get some money that way. And the interest is there, which probably wouldn't be if they weren't nominated at all.
With about 30 seconds here, the plan, at least stated by the Oscars producers, is that they'd like to be back in the Dolby Theater next year and do the Oscars the way they used to. Do you think it's taken a permanent hit? About 30 seconds.
Bryan Cranston had made that announcement. Yeah, it's going to be, it's hard sledding. It's hard sledding for all of these legacy shows. I think that the Oscars have a better chance of bouncing out of this than the Golden Globes. The Golden Globes were just horrifyingly horrible. Like, they were just terrible this year. Nothing worked. It was just a disaster. So, I mean, the bar is going to be really low for them. I don't know. Maybe the Oscars pulls out of it. I don't know.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled The Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. You can read his movie reviews at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Pastor Geese will return later this week for a review of episodes 5 and 6 of the Disney Plus TV series, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
Pastor Will Whedon of The Word of the Lord Endures Forever will be with us next. We're going to be studying the Easter hymn, This Joyful Eastertide. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is a devotional resource for middle school and high school teens titled Words of Strength and Promises. Topics include addiction, anxiety, being Christian, peer pressure, sexuality, and more. Learn more about Words of Strength and Promises at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. A great confirmation and graduation gift, Words of Strength and Promises, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Hi, I'm Pastor Palmer from Catalina Lutheran Church in sunny Tucson, Arizona. We're a confessional, liturgical, hymn-singing, Bible-teaching, gospel-preaching congregation, and we would love to share God's good gifts of word and sacrament with you. Look us up online at catalinalutheran.org or give us a call at 520-825-9255. God be with you.
Can you ever hear too much good news? Especially in challenging times, we need to hear how God is working through His church to bring truth, goodness, and beauty to the world. Hi, this is Rahema Kavuga of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Take a break from cable news and find refreshment at interesttime.org, where you can read all about what's happening in places like St. Mark Lutheran Church and School in Kaneohe, Hawaii. Sign up for a free subscription and share with anyone that needs a good boost. Again, that's interesttime.org.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You may be one of those pastors who need to be refreshed and refueled because of your parish ministry.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Charles Geeshan.
Concordia Theological Seminary has a wonderful program, not only in continuing education during the summer, but in an advanced study program called the Doctor of Ministry. And it's a very practical program because it focuses on congregational ministry. It incorporates biblical theology with the ministry of the congregation. It's also very accessible for pastors, and it's also affordable. You can major in pastoral care and leadership, teaching and preaching, or mission and culture. And we pray that pastors will take advantage of this program.
Learn more about the Doctorate of Ministry program at ctsfw.edu. or by calling 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.